is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Good to be with you on a Friday. Now, it's not long until the Alice Springs show is on, but sadly, the show will not have a cattle sale this year.
So I just believe the people who traditionally support that sale just didn't have the cattle. So, you know, I'd like to see it not sold, because it's an important part of the Alice Springs community at that time of year for the show.
Yeah, that's Stuart Weir from Emmeroos Station. You'll hear more from him in a moment. Did you know that it is Men's Health Week? Later in the program, we speak to Shanna Wan, who is the founder of Sober in the Country. Recently, she's been having a lot of really important conversations with our cattle industry. Shanna, on our program soon. We are broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. If you need a duck out for whatever reason, you can always catch us via the podcast. Now, media outlets in Argentina are this afternoon reporting that the nation's 30-day beef export ban is about to be lifted, but with restrictions. A short time ago, I spoke to meat analyst Simon Quilty, who's been following this story closely.
Well, we know that this coming Sunday, an announcement of some sort is expected from the Argentinian government. At best, it looks like some restrictions will be put in place, and negotiations, as we understand, between exporters in Argentina and the government have been going on all week. The government had come out wanting to prevent 60% of exports, and the exporters were willing to try and get 40% of exports prevented. So a compromise is now what is being discussed, and as I understand it, that 50% of exports will not go and therefore remain on the domestic market. So that's the true aim here is to lower domestic pricing in Argentina with the lead up to the November elections.
So lifting the 30-day ban, but it's not opening up all of the gates.
That's correct, Matt. So what they've done, though, is introduce some exceptions to the rule. And that is that quotas exist into two markets at the moment, the Europe market and the US. It's 20,000 tonnes into the US. And under the Hilton quota, it's 29.5 into Europe, plus a grain-fed quota that they share with Australia for just over 26,000 tonnes. And as a result of this, they're looking to introduce Israeli quotas just to further complicate things. So, Matt, they are looking to exempt what we call these quota markets, which would, if they do that, effectively mean they're shipping more like 60% of their beef should the compromise be agreed to. So they've removed those from the total and effectively said you can only ship 50% to all other markets outside of the US, Israel and Europe.
Argentina is one of the world's biggest exporters of beef. If its exports are restricted by half, what will that mean for the global beef trade?
I think it removes about 250,000 tonnes of meat, or beef, I should say, off the market for this year, which is a lot. And the biggest loser out of this will be China, without doubt. When you look at the combined Hong Kong and China market, last year it came to about 70% for Argentinian exporters. So the expectation is that they were getting approximately about 40,000 tonne a month last year in shipments. This year, that's going to be reduced to about 20,000 or less. So dramatic difference for China and for Hong Kong in what they will be receiving. It will shorten up supply dramatically and be very price supportive for exports for beef around the world for the balance of this year.
Over the last 30 days, Argentina's beef ban, is it right that the country actually did export some during this period?
They did, Matt. They did stay true to exporting to the US and to Europe. But it was a fairly minimal amount during that period. At the same time, beef producers went on strike within Argentina and stopped killing their animals and selling them to processing facilities. So you might say the market in Argentina held its breath and was in a holding pattern while the government's ban was in place. That came off about a week or so ago. In that period, we've seen a slight correction in cattle prices within Argentina. Effectively, that cattle price fall has been around about, so far, about a 9% correction just in the last week, Matt. So to answer your question, there were exports in place. I believe cold stores within Argentina are absolutely chockers full. But in the last week, the ban by farmers have stopped and we've seen about a 9 to 10% correction in cattle prices.
Could there be any surprises come Sunday, Monday in this story?
Well, there could be. The government could stick to its guns and insist on 60% reduction, or everyone walks away completely and business as usual. I doubt that very much. This government has history and there is precedent. Back in 2006, we saw exactly the same thing happen and effectively exports fell by 60%. That then triggered the following 5 to 7 years of cattle liquidations occurring across Argentina. And effectively, a lot of farmers left the cattle industry because of the sheer uncertainty and the involvement by the government at the time.
That is Simon Quilty from Global AgriTrends. The global beef trade is so tight at the moment, and this is adding to it. If anything changes on Monday, we'll make sure we let you know.
Hello, I'm Viv Oldfield from Crown Point Pastoral Company, and I love listening to The Country Hour with Matt Brett.
It is 23 to 1. Only a couple of weeks to go until the Alice Springs show, which is awesome, but sadly, the show will not have a cattle sale this year. That event has been cancelled, which is a shame. Over the years, this has been a really big event for the centre's cattle industry. It often attracts buyers in from around the nation who bid on local red centre stock. It's been great, but not this year, unfortunately. So what has happened? Hugo Rickard-Bell had a chat to Stuart Weir from Emeru Station.
Oh, I think it's just a genuine lack of cattle in the Alice area. I mean, the people who generally support that sale have all been through a fairly dry time for the last few years. And, you know, a lot of them are trying to rebuild their herds. And so the type of cattle that traditionally go in that show sale are probably not around. And, you know, hopefully next year there'll be a fair number to deal with again.
Are you surprised that this has happened?
No, not really, no, because I think there was people who were doing their best effort to get enough cattle together to hold a sale, because, I mean, it's a big thing for Alice Springs and at the show week. I mean, there's a station on this part of the world who traditionally supports that sale pretty well. You know, has a fair few cattle in there, and he's sold his cattle prior to this because he missed the season, so he couldn't hang on to them, so that put a fair hole in the potential cattle going to the sale. And then, you know, and then there are other people, the timing's not quite right for them, they've got other things they have to do, and you know, a lot of people hanging on to what they've got too, to put a bit more weight in them, because, you know, it's been so dry. So
Roger that. And hey, Stuart, in your opinion, as someone who's contributed and supported the sale before, could this be a sign of the beginning of the end of the Alice show cattle sale, or do you think, you know, hopefully this year is an isolated example?
Look, I can't answer that. I'd like to think not. You know, I'm obviously the chair of the Alice Springs NDCA, so, I mean, from that point of view, you'd like to think not, because it's a significant revenue raising for the yard, and, you know, we need to keep that yard sort of with cattle through it to make it viable for the NDCA to keep it open. So I think, like, if my point from the NDCA point of view is that I think if we get a good season this summer and the herds build up, the people who traditionally put their cattle in that sale, because it's always a pretty good sale, will continue to do so. I don't see any reason why they won't. I just believe the people who traditionally support that sale just had a, you know, just didn't have the cattle. So that's all there is to it. And I'd like to see it not fold, because it's an important part of the Alice Springs community at that time of year for the show.
Oh, it's certainly a shame for the Alice Springs show and all those involved. But, you know, on the other foot, the general atmosphere of the Northern Territory cattle industry at the moment is all in all pretty positive. How is the season looking out at Amaru?
We've got a fair bit of country out this side that we operate. I mean, the further you go east here, the drier it gets. Amaru itself's pretty good. Dunedin and Old MacDonald to the south of here are pretty good, but as you head east, our opponent's pretty ordinary. We've got to shift a fair few cattle off there. So I've flown across that Bulya country through, you know, like eastern Alice Springs a couple of times in the last couple of months, heading to Queensland. It's dry. Once you go sort of east of Arapunya Lucy Creek, it gets pretty bad through there. You know, not drought conditions, but it's certainly dry enough.
Stuart Weir of Amaru Station speaking there to Hugo Rickard-Bell. So just repeating the news, unfortunately, the Alice Springs Show cattle sale has been cancelled this year. It is 19-1. You are tuned into the Country Hour. We got some big news yesterday, didn't we? Some big news. The Bachelor Abattoir, which hasn't processed a cow or a buffalo since December last year, is set to reopen on the 5th of July. So in about a fortnight's time, Bachelor Abattoir set to be up and running again, which is wonderful news. We got a call yesterday from Louise Bellardo from the NT Buffalo Industry Association. She was pretty excited.
We got very good news close to home that the Rumjungle Abattoir will open on the 5th of July. We've got a lot of buffalo sitting in paddocks behind wire, ready to go. Everyone acknowledged that last year was a very difficult year to open an abattoir, and they have been struggling with some skilled workforce, amongst other things. But the advice today is that they will be opening on the 5th of July.
Yeah, Louise Blardo from the NT Buffalo Industry Council sharing that good news with us yesterday. We've since heard from Central Agri Group confirming that date, July 5. So great news for the cattle industry, for the buffalo industry, and for the town of Bachelor. This meatworks employs a lot of people. So great to hear that it will be back up and running come July 5, if all goes to plan. One of the big stories this week was this in-principle free trade agreement with the UK. The days of British backpackers spending 88 days in our regions to extend their visas, it looks set to be scrapped. What will this mean for our territory farms and our territory cattle stations? We'll be talking more about this after the Clash. Right across the territory on the ABC, you are tuned into the Country Hour. This week's in-principle free trade agreement with the UK looks set to end the days of British backpackers needing to work 88 days on a farm to extend their visa. Will we ever see British backpackers picking mangoes or mustering territory cattle ever again? Lindy Severin is the owner and manager of Curtin Springs, which is to the southwest of Alice Springs. She says over the years, UK backpackers have been vital to her business.
You know, we employ a lot of backpackers. We've employed a lot of backpackers from the UK. And we know that once they get out here, they always have a great time. But it's going to be about getting them out here in the first place. And I think that's going to be a bit tough now.
If the 88 days of rural work is no longer required for British backpackers to achieve their second visa, do you think that might drag people away from experiencing rural Australia?
I think it will have to. I've not long had the information and it's sort of mulling around a little bit, but you'd have to go. It is going to influence decisions about where people are going to be able to, where they make a decision about going to do some work. It may increase our visitor numbers where they still want to come and experience the region but as a tourist and not as a worker. So they'll have the money to come and do that because they've been able to work elsewhere. But they may not stay. So I think the challenge is going to be, how do we attract them to come? Because you can certainly understand why the coastal areas and the more heavily populated areas have got some attraction. And we all know that they love it when they get here. And they can certainly save a lot more money working remotely than what they can working in the coastal areas or the cities. So maybe that's one of the selling points we're going to have to push, is that there's not a lot of places for them to spend their money out here, so they get to save a lot. So I think how we attract them, how we attract those workers, is going to have to be a fairly sophisticated approach, because I think they're going to dry up.
So Linda, from your experience, of the backpackers you have had to Curtin Springs that were from the UK, how many do you think would have gone rurally if not for this farm work requirement?
Well, I suppose there's a little bit of a mix for us, because we don't employ a lot of working holiday makers on the station itself. We usually get the second bite in their sort of second year. Or they've already done their 88 days and then they're looking to go out and explore a little bit wider. But certainly I do know that there are a lot that have been employed in the region for their 88 days over the years, you know, hundreds of thousands of them. So if we take that away, then it's going to leave a huge hole that's just a bit unclear at this point how that's going to be filled. And the other thing is, it's going to just put extra pressure on the farming sector Australia-wide, because they're not going to be able to get that labour source. Because you can understand, if they've got the choice of doing some of the fruit picking rather than sitting in a bar or standing in a bar or working in the hospitality sector or working in any other sector, they're probably going to choose that over the more laborious jobs. So how we attract them, how we attract them into the regions, and then just as importantly, how we attract the workers into the farm sector Australia-wide is going to be a huge challenge.
That's Lindy Severin from Curtin Springs Station out near Uluru. Charlie Howarth, he came to Australia in June 2019 as a backpacker from England, and he got himself a job on Cowyita Station in the Kimberley. He's still there and is now the leading hand in the stock camp. Hugo Rickard-Bell asked if he would have chosen to go and work on that remote cattle station if his visa extension hadn't required it.
Personally, because I want to go into agriculture, I want to be a vet back home. Personally, I would have, but I'm not saying the same for everyone else. If you take those rules off, I'm not sure that everyone would want to go remote, working in a remote station or a fruit picking farm, if they don't have to. If you can stay in city, stay in Victoria, stay in Melbourne and be a barista or a bartender, something a bit more social.
So overall, as someone who is part of the current visa system, what is your take on the recent decision to end farm work requirements for British backpackers?
For British backpackers, I think it's a great thing. They don't have to go remote anymore and work for 3 months to get a second year visa. But on the other hand, for farmers who need those workers, I think that's quite potentially a bad thing. They're not going to get as many workers to pick all those fruit. Fruit are going to go, could potentially start going to waste, and it could be bad for the economy.
So, Charlie, having travelled around Australia a fair bit, and as a backpacker, you know, you would have been in and out of certain hostels, and you've worked on a cattle station now for 2 and a bit years. In your experience, do you think you're an isolated case of someone who's quite interested to go out and work rurally?
I think that I possibly am. I don't think that many people would want to go quite as remote as this if they didn't have to, if they could stay in the city. But there still is people out there wanting to do this. Like when I came into Australia, my first week, I went to a farm over in Queensland and I met heaps of backpackers on a farm that was specifically designed to train you up before you headed off into rural life. So they give you all the skills that you required. But I don't know if that was so that they could get their 88 days, so that they were more skilled, so they had more job opportunities, better job opportunities, or if it was because they genuinely wanted to go rural and work on stations and on farms.
That is Charlie Howarth, who works on Kalyeta Station there in the Kimberley, speaking to Hugo Rickard Bell. It'll be interesting, won't it, if the Brits don't have to do their 88 days out in the regions. Will we see them there ever again, or are they more likely to try and take up a job pulling beers in Darwin and places like that? Only time will tell. It is 7 to 1 on the Country Hour. If you head along to the ABC Rural website this afternoon, interesting article which reads, "Coalition divided amid concerns agricultural visa could undermine Pacific Islander scheme." That's up on our website right now if you're interested.
What do you think makes someone an Australian of the Year?
It's people who show courage, sacrifice and kindness.
Now's the time to reflect.
On your community.
And who you admire.
Now's the time to respect.
By nominating and acknowledging them.
Now's the time to celebrate.
Their story, their contribution
and their generosity.
I'm Hamish McDonald and I'd love you to nominate an inspirational Australian who you think is worthy at australianoftheyear.org.au.
6 to 1 on the Country Hour. This is set to create a bit of debate. A Senate inquiry has been launched into the labelling of plant-based products using terms like meat-free mince and vegan bacon. Should they or shouldn't they? It's Queensland Senator Susan McDonald who has fired up the inquiry.
Somehow, here in Australia, it's got very messy. This is not so much about patty or sausage or mince, but it is about terms like beef and lamb, pork. I've seen some really interesting examples of a product that said, I'm not bacon, but it had a picture of a pig on the front. But again, I do need to be clear, this is not about being against a new product line that's coming forward, you know, plant-based proteins and cell-manufactured proteins are a new part of society. They're a new part of the consumer's options. But what I am keen on is that we recognise the intellectual property of farmers and graziers over many generations, hundreds of millions of dollars into animal nutrition and welfare, genetics, pasture improvements, that is all recognised. And the intellectual property of the names of meat, beef, lamb, sheep, chicken, all of those things should be restricted to being from an animal.
That is Senator Susan McDonald, who has launched this inquiry into the labelling of plant-based products. Should these alternative protein companies be allowed to use terms like meat, bacon? Should we have chickenless chicken on our supermarket shelves? Professor of Linguistics Nick Enfield says the question about the use of the word meat is interesting because meat is not trademarked.
So part of the question here is about what is the proper application of a particular word in the language. So meat is not a trade name. It's not a copyrighted word. So this is not the same as somebody, you know, stealing your trademark. Meat is a regular word in the English language. And part of what's at stake here is, you know, what's the correct usage of it. Now, the thing about words in the language is that they have a life of their own and they change over time. And meat itself is an example of that. So if you go back some centuries in the history of English, you'll find that in Old English, the word meat simply meant food in general, you know, whatever you have in your meal. So it included plant-based foods as well as animal products. So there's nothing about words intrinsically that allows you to kind of lock down their meaning. And essentially, people in a community will vote with their feet, as it were, and they'll simply use words in a way that everybody understands.
And to describe something that looks like meat, it might be plant-based, as, you know, a plant-based form of meat, that may well be what consumers want to call it.
Absolutely. So you know, there's a few kind of issues around this particular case as opposed to the sort of broader principle. So one thing to note about this particular case is that people who produce plant-based meat are not trying to pretend that it's an animal product. They, in fact, it's the very opposite. So the market that they are getting into is the market for people who don't want to eat meat. And so these products are very clearly labeled as plant-based. And I think the idea that people are being deceived in some way by using the word meat, it simply doesn't stand up. It's simply because they are very clearly marked as plant-based. If you look more generally at kind of how words get used in the language, there's so many examples where people will extend a word. So meat itself, of course, gets used for, you know, the fleshy part of a fruit, for example, you know, the meat of a watermelon or something like this.
The meat of an avocado or the meat of an orange. Yep.
Absolutely. These are just standard ways of talking. And so there's nothing unusual about that particular kind of extension of use. So it's not a strange use of language. It's also not a deceptive use of language because it is marketed to people who don't wish to eat an animal product.
Nick Enfield, Professor of Linguistics at the University of Sydney. It'll be interesting to see how this Senate inquiry plays out.
Hi, I'm Ben Hoffman, ant specialist from CSIRO. When I'm out and about collecting ants, I love listening to the ABC's Country Hour.
I know what Kerry Lonergan would say. Should alternative protein companies be allowed to use meat, bacon, chicken-free chicken? It is an interesting one in the year 2021. Hey, we still have plenty to come on today's Country Hour, but we have to skedaddle to the news now because it's 1 o'clock.
Yeah, hi, I'm Dean Peters from Pasbali Paling Company. I've been with the company for 22 years, worked in many different areas from remote to diving. Yeah, you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. I trust you are well. This Friday lunchtime, it's Men's Health Week this week, and in a moment we'll be having an important conversation about alcohol consumption in rural Australia. Have you ever gone to one of our famous bush events and felt the pressure to have a few tins or maybe more? In a moment, you'll be hearing from the founder of the charity called Sober in the Country. It's Men's Health Week. Let's talk about it. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Billy Lynch is there this afternoon. How are you, Billy?
G'day, Matt. Good, thanks.
I just heard on the news that it's currently 12 degrees in Alice Springs. It's a chilly day.
Yeah, very chilly. And so we've got the cool southerlies and it's cloudy, so there's not much sunshine. The apparent temperature, so what it feels like, I haven't seen get over 8 degrees all day today.
Ooh! When will things improve in that department for the good people of the Alice?
Well, not tomorrow, because the cloud band's going to thicken up a little bit. actually, we're expecting some light showers across the region tomorrow. But sunnier days from Sunday, well, briefly from Sunday before the next cloud band. So, in general, not warming up too much through central Australia this week and early next week.
And the promise of a little bit of rain. What's the forecast sitting at today in terms of millimetres?
Yeah, so I guess just to clarify, there's two cloud bands. So all week, just maybe we've been getting the cloud bands mixed up, but there's this current one, which is a weaker one, expecting just a couple of millimetres, you know, 0.5 to 2 or 3 across the southern Tanami, Lassiter district, and then, yeah, extending into around the Alice Springs region tomorrow as well. So just some sprinkles tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
A little break on Sunday, and then, yeah, this next cloud band coming through, which does look stronger. So getting into the Lassiter district Monday, but probably at its sort of peak strength Tuesday and Wednesday. Not huge totals, but still look anywhere between 1 to 5 millimetres per day, sort of on the Tuesday and the Wednesday. So, you know, by the time the cloud band has completely cleared, which should be sometime during Thursday, you know, the region could pick up, you know, maybe up to 5 millimetres, maybe even 10 in a few places, perhaps in that southwest corner.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up. I'll admit that I'd confused the two systems, so thank you for that.
Yeah, no worries. I've been listening to the program this week and just wanted to clarify that.
No, good man. In the top end, it's a bit blowy all of a sudden.
Yeah. So we do have a marine wind warning out for the southern Gulf of Carpentaria for today. That should just be winding up now. But yeah, quite a strong push of southeasterly winds pushing into the top end, right through the top end tomorrow. So we'll maintain the fresh winds on the coastal waters with another strong wind warning in that southern Gulf of Carpentaria tomorrow as well, Matt. Winds pretty fresh this weekend, but easing off a little bit on Sunday. So if you're wondering Saturday or Sunday, do I go out? Well, Sunday will be slightly lighter.
Go Sunday,
but still check the forecast. It's still going to be quite fresh. We're just not anticipating any marine wind warnings. And the other significant factor, there's still quite a bit of humidity across the top end this morning. We saw quite extensive fogs across the Arnhem District, but we can definitely see that dry air push into Borroloola at the moment, and it will really dry out across the top end tomorrow, and then we'll get the cooler minimum temperatures from Sunday morning.
Anything else we need to know as we head into a weekend?
Oh, I guess just around the northwest top end with the dry, windy conditions, the fire dangers hitting the very high range for the first time this season as the grass continues to dry out. So just be aware of that too.
Okay. Must be getting close to Territory Day, is it? With fire weather warnings on the up.
We're getting closer, aren't we? Yeah.
All right then. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Matt. You too.
That is Billy Lynch there at the Weather Bureau. And just repeating, there is a strong wind warning in place this afternoon for the Roper Groote Coast. Earlier on in the Country Hour, we were learning about this Senate inquiry that's been launched into the labelling of plant-based products. Should alternative protein companies be allowed to use terms like meat-free mince and vegan bacon? Got a text from Val. I think I know how Val feels about this one. She has sent through a definition, care of Wikipedia, but it says pretty simply that meat is animal flesh that is eaten as food. It is 1:10 here on the Country Hour.
G'day, it's Brent Murdoch. I'm the Director and General Manager of Vista Gold. I look after the Mount Todd project, and we always listen to the Country Hour.
Across Australia this week, it is Men's Health Week, an important subject, one that we don't talk about enough. I'll just share with you a few lines from the official website. It says, more males have accidents, more males take their own lives, and more males suffer from lifestyle-related health conditions than females at the same age. It says, Men's Health Week provides a platform for challenging and debating key issues in men's health and to raise the profile of men, their health outcomes and health needs around the country. Our guest on the Country Hour today is Shanna Wan. She was actually a special guest at this year's NT Cattlemen's Association conference, and she is the driving force behind the charity Sober in the Country. Shanna, thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. It's great to be on the show.
And looks like you've been busy this week, Men's Health Week, chatting to blokes and women in that big mining town of Musselbrook, hey?
Yeah, we've had a terrific visit up here, actually. And look, I make no secret of the fact that speaking to men is a really, really, it's a favourite part of what I do through this charity. We've got a real soft spot for Aussie blokes. So it's been a really great week, really great week.
For those not familiar with Sober in the Country, what is it?
So, Matt, what we are a not-for-profit nationally across Australia. And to cut a long story short, we have a very simple mission to make it okay to say no to beers in the bush. And so we're a registered charity. So much like, say, for instance, Dolly's Dream is raising awareness around suicide amongst youth, we raise awareness around alcohol in the bush, specifically rural, regional, and remote Australians. And we do that through very, very authentic, honest yarns. We do it through peer support, and we do it through broad-scale advocacy. And, we've been up and running for a couple of years now after I spent about 5 years getting it off the ground as a volunteer. And suddenly, overnight, 7 years later, we've gone national, and we're pretty much in every corner of Australia now, which is just extraordinary. So that's what we do, and that's who we are.
Your own story to get to this point's a pretty big one, Shanna.
It so is.
are you able to share a bit of it with us?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I am. And, the thing is, my story is the story of so many other people. And the reason I tell it is not because I'm special or unique, but because it's actually extremely ordinary. And I think why the charity and our message is now resonating so far and wide is that I'm just the person who went first and articulated a story that is so common to so many of us in remote areas. And it's a story of a little party girl on a station who was a Jillaroo at the age of 18, fresh out of boarding school, with a world of opportunity at my feet. And I had some really traumatic experiences in the middle of nowhere on a station, and I turned to alcohol to work my way through, trauma that I'd never had time or professional help to address. And alcohol sort of became a crutch for me to fit in, to find social courage, and to navigate the world as a young, highly inexperienced, naive person in this, tough arena that is Outback Australia. And fast forward 22 years, and that really unhealthy way that I was using alcohol to cope with stress or fear or post-trauma or any of those things ultimately led to alcohol becoming a really unhealthy coping mechanism for me, and eventually led to alcoholism and nearly cost me my life in 2015. And it's a really important story because, alcohol is a sneaky thing, and to become addicted to it, it isn't an overnight story. It can take a couple of decades for it to get a hold of you and nearly take you down and take your life. And that was my story. And look, the more I share it, and by the way, I need to probably clarify that for me, I was still working 14-hour days and presenting magnificently at the end. But by night, after 5, I was blackout drinking on a regular basis. And, so my alcoholism was very cleverly disguised. I sort of wore my public face, and then, private Shanna was falling apart. And that is a story extremely common to people. We think you can only have a problem if you're drinking out of a brown paper bag at 8 o'clock in the morning, but it's far more insidious than that. And that was my story. And as I said, it's shared by many, many Australians. So I just speak the truth of what that looked like and how it was. And I'm very bloody glad to be alive and 7 years alcohol free today. It's I never imagined how great it would be. And I'm, very grateful for that.
And was there a moment, that turning point?
Yes, falling down a flight of stairs and nearly breaking my neck and waking up in emergency was certainly my rock bottom moment. And to be honest with you, Matt, I was suicidal at the end of my illustrious drinking career. And I didn't think I cared whether I lived or died. But, thank God that particular day for me, there was a little part of me left that wanted to fight. And in the end, what the deal breaker was for me was connecting with other people who spoke honestly about their own story and who had made it out the other side. And I'd never heard of or seen that before, and it was just like an absolute revelation to me that I wasn't the only person having this private and horrific fight. And, you know, connecting with other people was a game changer. And, yeah, doing some very, very, very hard work and choosing to fight and choosing to live, it was everything changed. And I just wouldn't have imagined in my wildest dreams that I could get out of it. And yet here I am inspiring others to do the same. And, again, I say not because I'm extraordinary, but because it's so damn ordinary and it's such a common thing. Yeah.
In rural Australia in particular, how hard do you think it is to give up the drink or just even reduce your drinking of alcohol?
It's bloody hard. The good news is slavery in the country is making it easier. There's no question about that. But we have got some serious mountains to climb. It is really, really difficult. And, you know, the reason sober in the country is laser focused on rural and remote Australia is it's just a different ballgame, right? We live in permanent ISO. We're constantly remote. We're constantly isolated. And when we get together, pretty much the binding common factor in all gatherings in the bush is grog. And if you don't have a problem with alcohol, that's great. But for people who do, or for people who are developing what is clearly a troublesome relationship with grog, well, it's really, really hard. And we deal with these people every single day and we support them through our peer group every single day. And it's absolutely heartbreaking, Matt. We hear stories all the time about blokes. Let's take a rough and tumble Aussie bloke, rugby player. And this is a real life case study, if you like. Someone I have a huge amount of respect for who gave up alcohol, and he had to because he was going to lose his family and his health and most likely his life if he didn't. And to this day, 3 years down the track, he still gets poked at the arm on rugby days by people who know his story, who demand to know when he's going to get on the grog again. That's the sort of mentality that we have indoctrinated ourselves within the bush. And again, you know, we know it might be good-natured. We get that it might be in jest. But the problem is people who've not walked the walk of alcohol addiction will never understand that that can be a life and death matter for people like me or my mate. And so we are culturally indoctrinated that everything revolves around beer, everything. And so for people choosing to have less or none at all, they're coming up against a cultural backlog. And that's literally why, you know, as a charity, we're not sitting here telling people what to do or how to do it. As an ex-alcoholic, I can assure you I'd know far better than that. But what we're rather doing is saying, hey, Australia, if your mate's saying no thank you or not today to a beer, back off and make it okay. And that's how our hashtag It's Okay to Say No has come about.
If you're tuning in, this is The Country Hour. It's Men's Health Week and we are speaking to Shenna Wan, who is from the charity Sober in the Country. You recently spoke to a bunch of young ringers. How did they react to this topic?
Oh, gosh, that was a fantastic thing. Yeah, it was really good. We went up to Cloncurry and, induction week with one of the major cattle companies. And thank you, Paraway, by the way, for inviting us. And that's really led to a ripple effect of more and more and more progressive, you know, stations stepping up to do this. So I'm not going to lie, Matt, I was so nervous going in to speak to these people because it was pretty much me going and facing my past front on. It was scary as hell. You know, it's so funny. I very rarely get nervous when I speak, but that day I thought, oh, dear God, please make this be a good one. Anyway, it was amazing. It was beyond anything I could have expected. And I had the pleasure of staying for a whole week on that particular station, and before the week was over, pretty much every single person came up to me and shared their own story about issues, troubles, struggles that they'd shared, and how the culture of you better drink or else you'll never fit in had been crushing them. And it was really funny. After I did my talk, the ringers all showed up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed the next day, and boss made a joke and said, I've never seen such a good turnout on day one. You know, he said, and one of the young fellas said, thank you so much for that. It gave me permission to to just be sensible and go to bed and not necessarily get wasted and wake up hungover. And he said secretly that's what I wanted to do, but I would have felt pressure to stay up all night. So, yeah, again, we're just opening up the conversations. We're just letting people know you don't have to do the same thing we've always done. Let's maybe look at our health. Let's maybe look at our behaviour on stations and just do it a bit better. And the response has just been unreal, Matt, like really, really positive. Yeah, it blows my mind every time, to be honest.
The famous Brunette Downs races is on next week in the Northern Territory. There'll be some cold ones for sale there. Just finally, what would you like us to think about when it comes to alcohol?
Look, there are so many awesome things we can do to just help our mates who are choosing to have less or no beers. So, for instance, Brunette Downs race is a great example. I'm sure that the bar will have plenty of grog on stock, but will they have any alternatives to alcohol on offer other than Coke or water? Probably not. Maybe they'll surprise me and they will, but I'd love to encourage listeners up there or anywhere, actually, start putting some drinks in your eskies that are delicious alternatives. So, for instance, it could be zero alcohol beers. It could be just some fresh lime to go in a soda for the ladies, like whatever. We don't cater for non-drinkers, and that's quite frustrating. So, you know, let's look at doing it a bit better and catering for more than just the drinkers. And here's a tip. People like me would pay $10 for a delicious alternative. We would, without even blinking, because we'd be that bloody excited to be getting included. And if you're going along and you're a ringer and you're very socially excited, that's very understandable. But if you've got a mate who's with you who wants to back off or not necessarily take it all away, then shout him a bloody soda water and let that be the end of that. Don't give him a hard time. You know, so really the core of our message is just look after your mates, look after each other. And when people are, you know, being given permission to not take it all away, often they'll grab that opportunity because that's secretly something they'd like to be able to do. And it's saving and changing lives, and it's pretty fantastic. So stay safe and have fun.
Hey, thanks for your time today. Have a great Friday.
Thank you, Matt. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, again, it's Ty here from Gimatch Station over in Gove. We run about 1,000 out here. We've got a little meatworks going. We kill beef for the local community members. Place about, I don't know, 40,000 acres, I suppose, roughly. And we're just sort of fencing it. Fencing as we go along each year, fencing a bit more country. And, yeah, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Now, if that conversation with Shanna Wan has raised any issues for you, or if you'd like to learn more about the charity, just jump onto the internet and search for Sober in the Country. I tell you what, if you love the Country Hour, you're going to love this show on Sunday.
This week on Landline, we profile the Farmer of the Year. Also, a truck carrying watermelons has driven itself 1,400 kilometres across America.
We prove that it's more efficient, it's quicker. And that's very important on the fresh produce side where you have to get, you know, quickness to the market is important so you don't have spoilage.
And farmer philanthropy, one man's sad and inspiring story. That's Landline, 12:30 Sunday on ABC TV.
And the market report. Don't forget the market report. This week I've been really getting into those autonomous trucks, and I've also been getting into Australian white ewes. Dan Fitzgerald, you seen this story? Big money in the sheep game.
Yeah, this is crazy money, Matt. Some pregnant ewes sold for almost $1,000 a head in New South Wales. So, yeah, there was 41 pregnant Australian white ewes sold for $988 a head. That's some pretty crazy money. The farmer, obviously, he was just pleased as punch.
Stoked. I think their reserve price was $600.
Yeah, absolutely.
So smashed through that.
Smashed that. Here's a bit of what he had to say after he sold those. This is Colin Adler, the farmer.
Oh, unbelievable. I had no expectations that they would ever reach that sort of figure. My feet still haven't hit the ground.
And what did you think that they might sell for?
Well, we put a $600 reserve on them, so they were on the market at that money.
Well, exceeded what you were expecting then at $988.
Oh, you just can't believe it. I just can't believe it.
What do you think made them so special? Why did they make so much money, do you think?
Well, I've been buying good quality rams. They looked well. And as the old saying, quality sells well.
That is Colin Adler. He's a farmer from southern New South Wales.
Good on him.
Sold some ewes for $988 a head. He was speaking there to Cara Jeffrey.
I haven't got my calculator out yet to tally it all up on how much money he took home, but that is quite unbelievable. There's a story about this up on our website right now if you search for ABC Rural. And, yeah, landline this Sunday, we're going to throw up a few pictures, Dan.
They are good-looking sheep.
Yep. You know what? I'm no sheep expert, but you're right. They look good. They look the goods, and that is understood to be an Australian record, what we've seen happen this week via Auctions Plus. So well done to the Adler family. You have a good weekend, Dan. You're getting ready to go to the Tiwi Islands, hey?
Yeah, going to go do a little bit of fishing, wet a line.
Oh, half your luck. It's going to be a bit blowy tomorrow, apparently. So if you do all of your fishing on the Sunday, you should be laughing.
Righty-o, thanks for that.
I should have asked the Bureau more about the Tiwi Islands over the weekend. My apologies there. My apologies. There is a strong wind warning in place this afternoon for the Roper Group Coast. That's set to continue tomorrow as well. If you've missed any of our stories this week, you can find them on our website if you go searching for NT Country Hour. And what a busy week it has been, hey? Lots of talk of free trade deals, farmers wanting to know more about a new ag visa. And the Bachelor Meatworks set to reopen on July 5. We've had plenty to talk about. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've learned a bit. Enjoy the rest of your Friday. And of course, keep it rural.